Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Conference Committee on House File 1555. Good afternoon. We will be doing a couple of things today. First, we'll hear from Commissioner Harrington about his perspective on the bill. As you know, we have oversight of the Department of Transportation, Met Council, and some aspects of the Department of Public Safety's budget as it relates to traffic safety, the State Patrol, et cetera. So we'll hear from Commissioner Harrington on that. So then we will have heard from all three commissioners. And then, members, we will jump into the same and similar aspects of our bills and actually make some motions to adopt some of those provisions. So we're starting today the process of putting together the bill, which I'm glad about, and thank Senator Newman for again for his advice and counsel as we move forward together. So with that, members, I see Commissioner Harrington here, I believe, yes, and we'll start with him. And I believe, Senator Newman, that we have a hard stop at 4:45. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, members, I think there's a Senate caucus, and we'll adjourn for that at 5:45 and adjourn for the day at that time. Commissioner Harrington, welcome to the committee, and thank you for your work.
Chair Hornstein, members of the committee, and happy to be here again. So, happy to be able to testify on behalf of the Department of Public Safety in regards to the transportation bill. So, the Department of Public Safety's bill asks for funding to essentially support two different functions. One is the drivers and vehicle safety section, and then the other function is primarily money around the peace officer reimbursement for soft body armor. In regards to driver's license and vehicle functions, we are in great need of the $3 million in general fund spending that will optimize our FAST process. As many of you remember, we funded FAST in the initial budget, and then there was a deficiency request for $5.5 million that would allow us to continue and finish phase one of FAST. FAST is the driver's license, the real ID system. In order for the department to become real ID compliant, there is a phase two of that system, and that requires an additional $3 million in funding. That $3 million will allow us to go from phase one, which will be done by June 30th, per the deficiency bill, and then we'll move us into phase two, which is really where we have an opportunity to connect on a state-to-state basis so that our system will be able to talk to all the other states. If we do not get the $3 million in funding, we would not be able to do that, and there is a window of opportunity to do that where the federal government allows us access to the state-to-state compact. That opportunity is this fall. If we miss this window, we will wait another 18 months before we'll have another window available to us. That 18 months will put us out of compliance with Real ID, which has to be done by October of 2020. And so it is imperative that that $3 million be funded. In addition to that, we also have asked for special revenue fund base increases of $6.3 million for positions to increase the capacity and the capability of the Department of Public Safety's Driver and Vehicle Services Division. Once again, I refer back to the deficiency bill where we had come forward with a number of community concerns and stakeholder concerns, deputy register concerns, auto dealer concerns, tow driver concerns, law enforcement concerns, and the general driving and motor vehicle public's concerns about the functionality of and the service reliability at the Department of Vehicle Services. We were very happy to get at least a partial funding of our request for the deficiency. It was a $2 million appropriation given. With that $2 million, we funded 81 temps that will sunset on June 30th. What I want to tell you is that your money has been well spent, but that We will need continuation of that funding if we are to continue the good work that is being done by DBS. To give you an example, driver's licenses, we set a goal with the legislature to say we would like to see all driver's licenses turned around in 30 days or less. That doesn't seem like an unreasonable standard to be. At one point, we were at 95 days to get a driver's license, though. So over three months to get a driver's license. Today, with the help of the new staff, we are down at the enhanced driver's license are at 33 days, and regular driver's license are at 10 days. That's keeping up with the day-to-day level of need. If we cut the staff at the end of June, what we will see is we will see us go back to 95 days. We'll see us go back to well in excess of 3 months to get your driver's license. And that's not anything that I'm hearing from the stakeholders or from the constituents or from the customers that they would like to see. Titles, very similar. Our goal was to get them out within 45 days. When we started this, we were at 60 days. And today we're at 36 days and going down rapidly. We are clearing up the backlog, and people are now able to get their titles in what we think is a reasonably timely fashion. Not as fast as some of our stakeholders would like, but definitely moving in the right direction. And then finally, the last one I'll mention in this area is the PIC, which is the Public Information Center. One of the complaints we got from deputy registrars was they were sitting on the phone for as long as 45 minutes waiting to have a technical question answered. 45 minutes meant that the deputy registrars could not complete the transaction. It was holding them hostage that they could not get their business done. And I know all of you have probably heard from your deputy registrars about that issue. We set a goal to say that we believe that a call to the PIC should be responded to and answered within 5 minutes. 5 minutes is not no time, but it is certainly a whole lot less than 45 minutes. At the start, we were over 40 minutes at the PIC, and today, we're at 4 minutes and 26 seconds on average call wait time to the PIC. That's what adding additional staffing to the Department of Vehicle Services has brought. It has brought you from an inefficient system that had so many backlogs and had so many time wasters that the deputy registers, the auto dealers, and the customers were all suffering from that, to a system that today is what we think is providing reasonably good customer service. Not exceptional customer service, but reasonably good customer service. And we believe that if we are given the proper funding, that we will be, in fact, able to give exceptional customer service. Because one of the realities with the way we have staffed this is that we have temps there who are inexperienced, and so they do not have the level of training and experience to answer the really tough questions. Can you imagine what would happen if you had well-trained and experienced full-time staff, that this was their primary job? How quickly they would be able to answer those tough questions from the deputy registers, how quickly they would be able to process the complicated title transfers, how quickly they would be able to get all of the data necessary for an enhanced driver's license. Our proposal includes a request in base funding from the highway user tax distribution of $471,020 and $456,021 and ongoing. This will allow us to transfer four revenue staff who are currently paid out of a special fund and move them into the correct fund. And, in fact, it will allow us to get two more staff in there doing revenue collections. This is that state-to-state revenue where commercial truck drivers who have to pay a certain amount of tax as they're moving from state to state, we have to make sure that we have the folks that are there to analyze those documents and collect the right amount of taxes. And so this appropriation actually will more than pay for itself by the amount of taxes that will be collected with this additional staff. We've asked for an additional increase of $536,000 starting in fiscal 21 to maintain the services of the Public Support Division. This is simply a reflection that the rent has gone up and salaries have been negotiated and have gone up, and that if we do not get this, that this then is really a cut. failing to pay, to give us the money for the support division means that at some point we have to have less staff doing the work. And we are not staff heavy in any area currently. We're using temps and we're using contracts and we're using every angle that we can to keep the staffing at absolute the minimum that we need to get the job done. But in some cases, that minimum means that the job does not get done in a timely fashion. There's a request for $2.48 million from the Trunk Highway Fund for the for our annual budget for IT. Once again, failing to fund this is really a cut because the computers we have will go out of date, the software will go out of date, the security patches will go out of date, and if we do not have the funds appropriated, we will have to take the funds from someplace to keep our system secure. I spend probably an hour or so every day going over cybersecurity threats to the state, working with Minute on that. And I can tell you that you do not want a system that has gaping holes in it. My colleagues in many other jurisdictions have been taken hostage by ransomware, where quite literally they have taken control of their police department and other governmental record systems, and it has caused them to have to shut down operations for days at a time until they could either pay the ransom or replicate the system or come up with a brand new system, which is far more expensive than the annual appropriation that we're speaking of here. So having the funding to support our IT software and hardware is not a nice to have. It is a have to have. And once again, not having it funded means that we have to find that money somewhere, because we cannot allow our systems to have the kind of gaping holes that I'm hearing from my colleagues in other jurisdictions that they're having. There is a recommendation for a general fund base increase of $45,000. And that general fund increase is for the peace officers' body armor or vest reimbursement fund. Once again, this is a pass-through. So every cop that works in the state of Minnesota is wearing body armor. There has been an agreement made for years that we would reimburse the local jurisdictions for their part of that body armor. For years, that fund has been insufficiently funded, and so that around the middle of the year, that fund runs out of money. Having been a chief in St. Paul and a chief at Metro Transit, I've had it happen in both departments, where you hired a new class of 20 brand new cops or 10 brand new cops, or in our case yesterday, 41 brand new troopers, and you're going to send them out on the road. And the expectation is you're going to send them out on the road fully equipped for the dangers that a peace officer in the state of Minnesota may face. And one of those dangers is attacks, felonious attacks, veg weapons, and firearms. But in many years, we would go to the state and say, okay, we've spent the money to get the body armor, we've reimbursed our officers, so they're not out of pocket. They'd go, well, the fund is tapped. Can you come back the next fiscal year? And we would say, of course, we'll come back the next year. But I was running the St. Paul Police Department, which could find ways to float that note. If you're in a one- or two-officer department or a five-officer department in greater Minnesota, you do not have the fiscal flexibility to fund that. And so you either, once again, have to make a hard decision. Do you not pay this, or do you take something else off the table to do that? In addition to the $45,000 increase to the base, we've also asked for $374,000, which would actually clear up the current backlog, which gives you some idea of how big the backlog is for local jurisdictions who are trying to be able to fund their body armor account. Last couple items here. The governor has recommended a base increase of $5.26 million. This is coming from highway user tax distribution funds. This is to cover the increased costs that have already happened in producing license plates. Costs have gone up. materials have gone up. The needs of the folks that actually produce the license plates have continued to go up, but our funding mechanism has not kept pace with that, and so we are in need of $5.26 million to get even with what it takes to actually produce the physical license plates themselves. We've asked for $1 million and change to migrate our application servers from the Town Square Center, where we're officed. Rained heavily last night, and as I came in about 9 o'clock last night, there was water pooling in the basement of the Department of Public Safety. Not pooling high enough to damage the servers, but that is, in fact, the dirty little secret of where much of our IT infrastructure is kept. We need to have moved the IT infrastructure to higher ground, and we need to upgrade that IT infrastructure. This $1 million would allow us to migrate that from the Town Square to a more suitable location, and then there is also an appropriation that would continue to make sure that the IT infrastructure is upgraded and the right patches are there. Finally, we have asked for an increase of $500,000 for the State Patrol. And this is for capital security and for security for the Capitol complex and the governor's residence and executive protection. One of the things that we've recognized is that two things have happened in the last few years. One, we have seen more protests and larger protests and larger gatherings at the state capitol, which has required additional capitol security and additional staff to be able to staff all of the different places on the capitol complex that people come to exercise, to visit the people's house and to exercise their First Amendment rights. Having those additional duties, we have not seen increase in funding to allow that. In addition to that, with this governor, we have a governor with a family, and so that has also increased our the level of exposure we have in terms of who needs to be protecting the governor's mansion and governor's residence. So we would seek funding for both of those, and we believe that $500,000 would, in fact, ensure sufficient staffing for both the Capitol complex and the governor's residence. Finally, outside of the fiscal area, there are some policy provisions that we think are important. We have asked for changes in language on wheelchair securement, which is that would help make sure that folks that use wheelchairs are being transported in safe, secure, and a manner that meets the ADA standards. This is a State Patrol request. We have looked for additional language. This is coming primarily from the auto dealers that talks about the use of the counselor ID to address concerns from auto dealers about adding this government document back into the list of approved documents for titling and registering a vehicle. And then we would like to see some changes in the law in regards to the lighting arrangement that some of our new, brand new companies like Uber and Lyft are using in terms of what kind of lights and what kinds of advertisements they have on their cars, and whether they, in fact, fit within the state law about what lights can be projected to the front. And so we've looked at those also. There are a few other pieces that we would have some concerns about, including the language of the slowpoke bill, which we believe is going to be very, very difficult to enforce. It would allow folks that are in the left lane to drive fast enough to pass whoever there is that's in front of them. And so how do you then decide whether, in fact, they're speeding or if they were just taking the legally allowed pass? That it presents problems. And the pickup truck exception for farm plates is also, we believe, really difficult to enforce. In conclusion, we are very, very grateful for the base funding that that we have seen. This is a request for the things that we have to have. I can tell you that as we prioritize our language and our bills, we took a very, very sharp pencil to them to make sure that we were not asking for things that we might need, but rather really asking for things that we absolutely do need based on evidence from your constituents who have called to say they do not want to wait in line for their driver's licenses and their titles, that they do not want to wait in line to change their specialty plates, information from law enforcement agencies who say they do not wish to have to float the cost of soft body armor, and the real risk to the state and to the state's infrastructure if we do not take care of the IT. And quite literally, this is a day-to-day conversation I have with my colleagues about what those risks are and how great the exposure is and how much damage an outside actor can do if they're allowed to penetrate the state system or if the state systems crash because of a natural disaster. So with that, I will close and stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. We'll take a couple of questions, and then we'll need to get on with our agenda. Chairman Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, two real quick questions. If you could explain this window of opportunity to implement Phase 2 and FAST, is the fact that if we don't do it, the window will close for the next 18 months. Is that by federal statute, federal regulation? What is the cause of that window closing for us?
Senator Newman, members of the committee, that is really a federal policy. So what the federal government set up the criteria for doing Real ID, they made sure that there would be an opportunity for states to access essentially a test ground where they could work out the bugs of their system as their system talked to other state systems. And so as part of that, they created this window, and you apply for this window to be on their test track, to use an analogy. We got permission when we initially contracted with FAST to get our window starting in August of this year. If we miss our window, that window we will have to reapply, and what we've been told by the federal government is that window will not reappear for about 18 months, which would put us out of compliance with Real ID. So it's a federal policy more than anything else.
One final yes, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One final question, Commissioner. Currently we are working on a resolution of the Minlars situation. And assuming we are able to follow the recommendation of the governor's Blue Ribbon panel and purchase the updated technology, would you agree with me that while we may need some additional folks at the PIC Center initially, with the advantage of this new type of software, that the increase in the staff at the PIC centers will in fact fall off because of the improved technology?
Senator Newman, members of the committee, what I would say in response to that is that I don't know what I don't know. And so I'm in a position here where I feel like I would have to speculate that the new technology will in fact simplify the kinds of questions that the deputy registers and that the customers, the citizens, call the PIC for. And I don't have enough information at this point to be able to really make that level of speculation with any level of certainty. I expect that there will be changes in the staffing model as we, once we contract with the folks for the third-party system, and once we know what the details of that system are. But it's very much like when we changed over from driver's license to FAST. There were changes in training, there were changes in procedures, there were changes that we had to make as we adopted the third-party system. And I don't know that we knew all the details of that until we had gotten into the contract and into the work with the system, and then got it into the implementation phase with the deputy registers and with the state staff to make sure of what those new duties and those new systems, what work it would take for us to do with that. As you will well recall, there has had to be workarounds, and what we're hoping for with this new system, I know this is certainly the my understanding from working with you on this, is that we're hoping that we will have far fewer workarounds with the new system. In fact, we would like to have this be a turnkey system so that there are no workarounds whatsoever. But it would be premature for me to speculate that that is, in fact, the case.
That's a fair answer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I have a couple more questions, and then we'll move after that into our same and similars. Representative Cagle and then Senator Dibble, and then we'll move on from there.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Commissioner, I recently had to have my ID renewed and decided to get a real ID. They told me it'd take 4 months, and it took 3 weeks. So whatever you guys are doing, good job.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a new driver's license in our household. It was an EDL, as it turned out, and it came in just over a month. So that was great. Thank you. And a new title as well, and that happened pretty quickly. So really happy to both experience and hear about the shortened time frames, because it's been kind of a hectic and stressful in our offices as we get those crabby calls. So thanks for making good use of those deficiency funds. And thank you for the presentation, and appreciate hearing about all of your budget requests and the reasons for them. I have one question, and you don't have to answer it. I don't think I've ever brought it up with you, but your staff probably knows the answer, because it's been a subject of bills that I've proposed in the past, and I think Ms. Boyd and Ms. Stengel know what I'm about to ask about. I don't understand why we appropriate highway user tax distribution fund dollars to the agency to manufacture the license plates, and then you turn around and collect fees for those license plates and keep those fees in the driver services accounts. So it's like we pay for those, and then you collect the money for them, and you just keep the money, and we keep paying you out of the highway user fund, and you collect the fees, and you get to keep the money for your own, that money for your own purposes. It doesn't seem to make sense. I don't know why that isn't just simply a fee-supported activity. And we did actually change that 1 year, but for some reason we sunsetted it or something, and now it's reverted back to the old way. So you don't have to answer, but I'd appreciate a response back. This is one place, Senator Newman, where we have common cause in the leakage conversation. I think that's a clear case of leakage that we could stanch a little bit.
Senator Dibble, I promise I will get an answer for you. You're right. This is not something you've asked me before, and it is not a question that has come up in my travels, but I will get an answer for you, and I will get back to you as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you, Senator Dibble. We appreciate your being here, and we will be seeking your advice as we move through the budget next week. Hopefully we'll have targets, and we'll get to work on that. So thanks again for all of your work and for appearing before the committee.
Senator Hornstein, members, thank you very much.
Okay, well, members, with that, we'll now move on to our discussion of same and similar provisions. We have a number of those, believe it or not, between the House and Senate, and I will ask counsel to walk us through these. We would potentially be able to make some motions and adopt a language that the committee feels that we have a consensus on. So with that, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the first of the identified same and similars is on school bus operation and traffic regulations. There are two parts to this language. The first is to establish yield requirements similar to yielding to buses, so that motorists would be required to yield right away to school buses that are attempting to enter back into a lane of traffic after having stopped to load or unload passengers. The second piece covers the school bus operating rules, or the driving rules for the school bus operators. It allows a school bus to proceed through an intersection from a right-hand turn lane instead of being required to turn right, so they kind of move back into one of the through lanes. And that, again, would be part of the action of following loading or unloading pupils.
Okay. Are there questions about this? Does everyone have the the chart. We'll work off that the chart that was handed out. This relates to R101 and R106. Excuse me? Oh. Okay, we'll have to make some copies then. I'm sorry about that. Well, we'll hold off on making any motions at this point, and maybe Mr. Burris can continue if he can at least follow along with his conversation.
Mr. Chair and members, the second, oh, and I would also note, wrapping up, I guess, on the school buses, that's identical language between House and Senate. The second of the provisions is also identical between House and Senate, and this concerns on-track equipment, so vehicles and specialized track equipment that operate on rails. And it would have that equipment be treated in the same manner as trains, kind of traditional trains, as far as traffic regulations, so that drivers would be required to stop for on-track equipment the same way that stopping for trains is required under current law. Again, that's identical between House and Senate. There's a series of sections on our starting on page R103 through R106. House sections 60 to 63, Senate sections 67 to 70. And should I just continue?
Yeah,
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
And then the next one, Mr. Chair and members, is on school bus colors, and this allows for rub rails, which is a portion of the school bus that's kind of along the belt line, to be either black or yellow. Again, this is identical between the House and Senate. That language is found on page R107 of the side-by-side. Also on page R107 is a authorization for TNC, Transportation Network Company vehicles, to be able to have a illuminated sign that would be a company sign that could go on the windshield. And I believe that there are two sections to that, one of which is on R107, and I'll need to refer back to identify the other location. The other part of the of this authorization is actually affirmatively permitting the mounting on a windshield. And then the next same and similar is on third-party school bus operator testing. There are two sections on defining terms and then the substantive language that provides for school districts and school bus companies to use third-party programs on administering school bus operator road and tests and skills tests to the other districts or school bus companies. Again, that's identical language between House and Senate. The next provision, identical between House and Senate, is on a motor vehicle sales tax allocation provision. This would allow for or require a minimum amount to be allocated to the suburban transit providers under the regionally allocated portion of motor vehicle sales tax funds that's administered or goes to the Metropolitan Council. And in the there's one additional identical provision between House and Senate that's not actually in the list that's either been or is being distributed. This is on decommissioned military vehicles. Humvees would allow for operation, registration, titling of those vehicles on public roads. And that's found on pages R81 and R89, House Sections 23 and 33, Senate Sections 37 and 43. Again, that's identical language between House and Senate. And that, Mr. Chair, is the list of the sames between House and Senate.
Thank you. Members, does anyone have questions of Mr. Burris on any of the same provisions? I think staff is passing out a document so that we'll literally all be on the same page here.
Same page.
Yeah, same page, that's right. That's right. Same, not a similar page, Representative Torres. Okay. If there are no questions, I think that we are ready to adopt these same provisions. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to accept the House language for, I'm going to try and state this correctly, so watch me, the House version of Section 57 and 64.
Okay, the motion is before us. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Newman?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we accept the House language for sections 60 through 63.
Discussion? All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the motion prevails. Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt the House language for Section 65.
Okay. Discussion, members? That's the school bus colors. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the House language for Sections 66 and 68.
And members, that's the Transportation Network Company Vehicles provision, display illumination of company signs. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Oh, discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion
aye.
Prevails. Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the House language for sections 77 and 78 and section 85, which is on the school bus operator testing.
Discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. And we've got two more. MVEST regional allocation, Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the House language for Section 115, which is MVEST regional allocation.
Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. And then we just had this last discussion on decommissioned military vehicles, and I don't have those sections. I didn't think that's 37 to 43.
It's 23.
Oh, that was
and
the
33.
Okay, 23 and 33. People have, this is the new one, which is not in our sheet.
Not in there.
So maybe this would, the Senate, we're taking Senate here, sections 37 and 43. Was everybody, this was the decommissioned military vehicles provision, and Mr. Burris had explained that. I don't know if folks are clear on that or want any additional discussion of it.
Right.
Okay. Senator Newman. Let's do a Senate one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the Senate language on sections 37 and 43 regarding the decommissioned military vehicles.
Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. So thank you, Senator Newman. And now we'll move on to some similar provisions. And Senator Newman, I believe you have an update for us on R-72 through 73. This is at the top of page two in the document.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do, and this has to do with the Eisenhower Bridge in Red Wing. And, Mr. Chair and members, I did speak during the joint convention that we held earlier today with both Representative Haley and Senator Goggins, who are the chief authors of this particular bill. And I would report to you that they have agreed on the name as Eisenhower Bridge of Valor. And I believe that is the House language, if I'm not mistaken. The Senate language is Eisenhower Memorial Bridge of Valor. And if you can direct, after we have discussion, I will move that as long as you can direct me into the correct section.
Okay. Discussion, or actually, Mr. Burrissa, do you have any advice then on what the motion may be that would reflect the agreement that appears to have taken place just a few hours ago?
Mr. Chair and members, the language is on page R72, and House Section 10 would contain, or does contain, the language that Senator Newman had referenced.
Okay. Members, discussion we had, I know on the House side we had quite a bit of conversation about this, both in transportation and ways and means. Okay, well, I think it would be moving House Section 10 then.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we accept the House language on Section 10 regarding the Eisenhower Bridge of Valor.
Okay. The motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Newman. Mr. Burris, House Section 53, Senate 58, the work zone flaggers.
Mr. Chair and members, there are a couple of other memorial bridges and highways if you want to discuss.
I forgot about
well.
That. Yes, let's get those done.
So House Section 11 and Senate Section 20 has already been enacted as a standalone bill, so the Conference Committee could just simply skip over that one and move to subsequent.
Yeah.
The next, then, would be sections, well, I don't know if you want to go one by one, Mr. Chair.
Or, sure.
Okay. Then the next one is the House Section 12, and that corresponds to Senate Section 26, would establish the Tom Rukavina Memorial Bridge.
This is Tom Rukavina, folks. Discussion.
Well,
Senator Dibble.
So Senator Tomassoni never failed to make the joke that it is paradox that for a diminutive guy, the tallest bridge in the state would be named after him.
That's true. It is quite a tall bridge, the Highway 53 bridge up on, if you enter Virginia. Yes, Senator Jacinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would also like just to make a comment. I met Mr. Rukavina, Senator Rukavina, at, I believe it was a first a bonding bill tour, and then also Senator Tomassoni's birthday, and a very nice gentleman and definitely a character, so it's nice to see that this bill goes to him. I'm sorry, Representative. He was a representative, not a senator. Sorry. My fault.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad the senator caught his terrible mistake calling offensive. Representative Rukavina a senator. I'm quite sure I felt a vibration under my feet.
I apologize.
I do have a question. Are these two sections identical between the two bills?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, they are the same. There's a technical difference, and the staff recommendation would be to go with this language. It's a phrasing shall versus must, and we're suggesting going with more modern terminology there.
Thank you.
Senator Neville.
One more little known fact, Mr. Chair. Senator Newman used to be a neighbor of Representative Rukavina.
And he's going to make the motion and maybe tell a story or two. But well, members, I do appreciate Representative Listlegard brought this to us in the House. And, you know, it is a moving tribute. I think there's many of us that that miss Representative Rukavina very, very much. He was a true champion of the Iron Range. His humor, his determination to get things done for his district and the state are legendary. And I hope that we will continue to keep him close to our hearts. And this is a very fitting tribute, and I'm glad we can include this in our bill. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Dibble is correct. Tom Rukavina was a neighbor of mine for years when I lived on the Iron Range. He lived across the road from me. My children and his children grew up together, and I can tell you that Representative Rukavina and I had many interesting conversations in our respective garages.
Interesting in Minnesota.
Over the issue of politics over the years. Truly a wonderful person. He's somebody that I've always loved greatly, and I really am going to miss him. He was a lot of fun, and he was very passionate. And so if you will permit me, Mr. Chairman, I'd be very happy to recommend the House language of Section 12 of the bill at this time. I would move that.
Thank you very much, Senator Moon. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the next one is a Captain Jeffrey Vollmer Memorial Highway. This is largely the same between House and Senate. The Senate language has a more accurate road identification. The House language has a technical difference that staff are suggesting. So the overall suggestion would perhaps be to, if the committee wanted to adopt this provision, going with House Section 19 with one technical change, and that would be on page 35, line 27, delete shall and insert must. I'm sorry if I said House. I didn't. Mr. Chair, members mean Senate Section 19.
That makes more sense.
Discussion, members? Okay, motion, Senator Newman?
Mr. Chairman,
sorry,
I
would, we did that.
Yeah. regarding the Captain Jeffrey Vollmer Memorial Highway, I would move that we accept the Senate language at Section 19.
All right, now discussion.
And
we have an addendum to the motion.
If I could modify that motion and accept the portion of the House language changing the shall to must.
Okay.
Hopefully my motion is understandable.
Is everybody clear on that? All right. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Newman. Mr. Burks.
Mr. Chair and members, the next of the memorials is the Richard J. Ames Memorial Highway. This is on page R72, House Section 14, Senate Section 22. And the recommendations from staff on the differences that are largely technical in nature would be to go with the House language, except to exclude the effective date for consistency.
Okay. Discussion? Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, I would move on the Richard J. Ames Memorial Highway that we adopt the House language at Section 14, except excluding the effective date.
Is everyone clear? Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, members, the next is the Kenneth E. Sullen and Eugene B. Schlottfeld Memorial Highway. This, again, is the same between House and Senate, except with respect to the technical difference. Again, it's a shall versus must, so the staff recommendation would be the House Section 15.
Questions? Senator Newman, a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the House language regarding Kenneth E. Sullen and Eugene B. Schlottfeld Memorial Highway at Section 15.
Okay, discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the next one is House Section 16, Senate Section 23, and this is the Ryan Clark Memorial Highway. Again, there's a technical difference, and the substance of the memorial is the same between House and Senate. Staff recommendation would be House Section 16.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Burris? Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, I move regarding the Ryan Clark Memorial Highway that we adopt the House language contained at Section 16.
Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, the motion prevails. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the next topic is on work zone flaggers, and this is on R95. The substance of the language is the same between House and Senate. There are a couple of technical differences, both having to do with clarifications. So the House language includes an additional identification of the penalty level and the fine amount. And the penalty is established chapter-wide at petty misdemeanor. So it is the substance of the penalty is the same between House and Senate. That's on the House side. And then in the Senate language, there's a clarification that the citation can be issued even if the officer wasn't present. So just to recap, this is the a provision that allows for citations after the fact under some circumstances when a driver violates work zone instructions from a flagger. And there are circumstances laid out that are the same between House and Senate as to when that citation could be issued. So the staff recommendation in if the conference committee wanted to take this provision would be to go with the Senate language, Section 58.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. I want to take this opportunity to thank Senator Rarick and Representative Cagle for their work on this. This wasn't an easy bill to pass. There were a lot of different stakeholders and specific issues that had to be worked through, and so I appreciate both of your work on this. I think this is going to be really important for construction workers, road workers, and the public safety in general. So I think this is a very, very important provision. Is there a discussion or questions of Mr. Burris? Okay, motion, Senator Newman?
Mr. Chair, if I may, because the authors are on the conference committee, I would defer.
Okay.
And allow either of the authors to make the motion at your discretion, Mr. Chairman.
Authors? author. Representative Cagle.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt Section 58 of the Senate language.
Yes, that would be the motion. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, moving back to page R73, there are a couple of Memorial Highway provisions that are Senate only. The first of these, Mr. Chair, is Section 24, and this is the Specialist Noah Pierce Bridge. And if I might take a moment to apologize for having butchered names and any future names that I may not butcher.
You've done fine. So I'll ask the Senate for perhaps an explanation of this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Page R73, Senate Section 24, is the Noah Pierce Bridge. Since it's Senate only, I would recommend Senate language, but I would suggest there's a shall on line 3711, and that should be changed to must to be consistent.
Okay. I imagine we should do that first. Senator Newman. We have a question.
Well, not a question, Mr. Chair, just a comment. This was in the House bill last year.
Okay.
So while it was not in our bill this year, it was language or a bill that was part of last year's House bill. I just wanted to point that out for the sake of the House members.
Okay, good. That's very helpful. Thank you. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we accept the language of the Senate language at Section 24. With the modification that on line 37.11, we change the word shall to must. That would be my motion.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, at the very bottom of page R73, Senate Section 25 is another memorial that's Senate only, and this is a State Trooper Ray Krueger Memorial Highway. Again, there's a shall to must change that would be suggested, and that's on page 37, line 17 of the Senate language. And you'll see that going on to page R74.
Okay. Questions? Motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we accept the Senate language at Section 25, but modify the language to take out the word shall on line 37.17 and insert the word must.
Thank you, Chair Newman. Discussion, Representative Perkelson.
Well, thank you. I just repeat my comment from the last provision that this also was in last year's bill.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. I think we're ready to vote on this. The motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, on page R74 is the final of the memorials. This is Senate Section 27. Again, this is a Senate-only provision. This would establish a warrant officer, Dennis A. Groth Memorial Bridge. And again, the staff would recommend a change from shall to must, and that is on page 38, line 1.
Okay. Any questions? Chair Newman?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I believe that this particular memorial bridge, Senator Klassen, I believe, was the chief author, so I'd want to give him that recognition. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the Senate language in Section 27 regarding the warrant officer Dennis A. Groth Memorial Bridge, provided, however, on line 38.1, we take out the word shall and replace it with the word must.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to mention that Senator Jim Carlson helped to present this bill because he was a high school friend and classmate of Denny Groves.
And oh, wow.
So I heard some personal stories about his recollection of this individual and growing up with him out in Eagan.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I had forgotten that, and Senator Carlson came into our committee with literally high school photographs of he and this individual, and they knew each other for years and years ago. So thank you for that, Senator Dibble. I had forgotten.
Senator Dibble.
I think we conditioned passing this on seeing his high school photos, and he never showed them to us. You never saw any high school photos of Senator Carlson, so still work remains to be done.
We will note that. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. I just would like to point out one more time that this also was a provision in last year's bill.
Good. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. All right. Do we have the motion? Yes, we have the motion before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, members. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, moving to page 3 of the comparison document, there are a series of sections that relate to motor vehicle dealers and the registration process. All of these sections are combined together kind of on the basis of the original bill having contained a number of these provisions. There are a couple of provisions from the original standalone language that are split out separately because of differences between House and Senate. So this first set of provisions are identical between House and Senate except for the effective date. The difference is July 1 effective date in the House and an August 1 effective date in the Senate. The provisions on for this set of sections deal with manufacturer chargebacks, authorization for dealers to withhold registration tax payments, allowing for dealers to move the location of vehicles without having to go through a title transfer when the dealer has multiple locations, requiring the Department of Public Safety to create a liaison for interaction with titling or on titling and registration issues, as well as modify the titling process involving secured parties and titling and notices of secured perfection of title changes. So the staff recommendation would be on would be adoption of the Senate sections 6, 36, 39, 41, 44, and 45.
And again, members, that would be the Senate language. Is there questions? Yes, we'll have Senator Jasinski, then Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As well as I would like to recommend the staff's date, but I have talked to Minnesota auditors, and they would really prefer the House effective date. 1 month does mean a lot of difference for them, so I'm asking the commission or the group to, if we are okay with recommending the House effective date to help with the auto dealers. Just open for discussion, please.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we move through these dealer provisions, there's a number of them on pages 3 and 4 of the comparison document. I just want to be sure that we're not getting ourselves hung up on two things. One is elements that have budget implications, and secondly, elements that relate to the Minlar's pivot.
Yes.
We're calling it the Minlar's pivot. I think we also decided that's a good end-of-session band name.
Well, you heard it first here, members.
Well, it's not actually my joke. It's one of our staffers' jokes, but it was pretty funny. So I just, if we can keep our eyes open, staff can help us answer those two questions. I mean, some of these are just process things that are fine. Everyone agrees to. They don't have to do with budgetary items or, budget implications or any Minlar's programming or whatever new system comes on, programming issues, and that's fine. But if they do, we should know about that. So
I think that's an excellent point, Senator Dibble. Just first to the... So a couple things. First, to Senator Jasinski's point, and this could be either for Mr. Burris, is the change in effective dates, is the Senate effective date just, or maybe it's for Ms. Stengel, was that chosen just because August 1st is typically when we do effective dates?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The staff recommendation was the August 1st date because that was how the bill went through both committees, because it was going through as a standalone policy bill, the default date would have been August 1st, so we recommended that to keep it true to that intention. Practically speaking, you know, July 1st, August 1st, that's a policy decision for the members to make.
Okay. Thank you for that. And Senator Jasinski did have a policy point here, so I think we should discuss that as a committee and proceed appropriately. Is there any discussion about the effective date? Strong preferences either side. We could,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we have Ms. Backus come down from MADA to give us any input on the challenges with those dates and if, how it affects anything.
Sure, Senator Sinsky, that would be great. I think the committee is looking for some direction. Ms. Backus, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. And with regard to the provisions being discussed, we would prefer to be able to take advantage of them earlier. These are things we were hoping to enact last year, and they didn't. So if we could do some of them sooner rather than later, that would be helpful. For example, the dealers that have to get transfer titles to move their trucks around, that's just adding burden on the system that's unnecessary. So it would be nice to eliminate that transaction now and get rid of having to do that while we're going through this Mindler's pivot. I also reviewed at least the fiscal note from the House as well, and there weren't any costs associated with these provisions as far as that fiscal note goes.
Questions from Ms. Backus? Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Is anyone from the agency here able to help us understand if moving it up a month presents any challenges or has any fiscal note implications, and also just remind us what the fiscal implications are of these six provisions?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn, welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Cassandra O'Hearn, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Fortunately, I don't have the language in front of me, so I just wanted to reiterate to the extent that it does impact any of programming costs that August 1 would be necessary. If it is, in fact, policy only, then July 1 would be fine. Fortunately, without the language in front of me, I'm not exactly sure which one of these could, or if they tie into the newly coined Mindler's pivot.
Can we get the language to the Deputy Commissioner? It should be available. It should be available. But members, I think depending on how quickly we can get a recommendation, we could also just, you want to take a quick look at it here?
Can we take it offline? And
yeah, I was going to suggest that we might just want to lay this over and see if you all can come up with an agreement. That would be better.
That works for us.
Members, we're going to lay over discussion of this section. And then it looks like we have one more. Motor vehicle dealer registration issue, and then we have a bunch more of these after this that I think may have some impact related to the Mindler's pivot. So, Mr. Burris on R77.
Mr. Chair and members, this is another piece of the auto dealers proposal. So, some of the same questions might come up. I might note that that first set of sections, as well as this provision, are what we understood from the review of the fiscal note to not have an impact on the current Minlar system or the Minlar's pivot, but certainly getting confirmation from the agency would be recommended.
Thank you, Mr. Torkelson. If you have another way of describing this, that would be...
Mr. Chair, I don't, but I think this is much more than a pivot. You know, we're not just turning a corner. We're starting a brand new day. And so I'm resistant, and we haven't voted on this terminology, and we probably won't, but I'm resistant to using this terminology, although I have great respect for Senator Dibble, who is currently out of the room. But it's not just a pivot. And so I would encourage us to stop using this terminology at this time until we find something better. But, of course, I'm just the minority guy here. So.
Well noted. Members, I think you were just complimented, Senator Dibble, by Representative Torkelson.
Sort of.
I think we're now banned from using the term Minlar. But members, seriously, I think we'll lay this over as well. Discussion of R-77 pending conversations between DPS and the auto dealers. But and I want to check run this by staff. You know, when I look at R88 and you know, really all the remaining items on page 4, this seems to deal with the Minlar's changes that are being contemplated. And if that's correct, then I don't think it would be prudent for us to take action. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the on R88, the first of the second row up from the bottom makes a change on late fees so that vehicle dealers would not be charged a late fee, and there is a fiscal implication to that. And the bottom, I think your instinct is right on the bottom one, that there it does relate to questions around Minlars and possible future information technology systems of the Department of Public Safety.
And thank you, Mr. Burson. Would that be also the case with the next several provisions we have related to motor vehicle dealers and registration?
Mr. Chair and members, the next provision is another piece of the motor vehicle dealer proposal. So, again, there might be, you know, some conferring on which have cost implications for information technology system. That one, House Section 32, is a data sharing provision that's House only. It was modified from the original as introduced version to trim down, kind of narrow the scope of what data would be required to be or permitted to be shared under that provision. And then steering committee.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the steering committee for the driver and vehicle services is also potentially related to Minlar's type questions.
Okay. Well, I would like to get the thank you, Mr. Burris, and I guess I'd like to get a sense from Chair Newman and others. It does seem that we may want to lay over all of these discussion of these items, you know, pending, you know, the bill we have and progress we're making. I'm not sure how you would like to proceed, Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with you. We have reached a point now in the transportation omnibus bill that is now overlapping into the bill that is currently being worked on, which we sincerely hope will fix the past Minlar's problems. And I'm very hesitant to go forward any further for a variety of reasons. So my recommendation, Mr. Chairman, would be that we just, you know, place a hard stop on it. I think we've reached the point now where we've probably completed the work that we can today. I think that maybe you and I should have some conversations on trying to figure out how to dovetail what we have in the transportation bill with what we are discussing on the Minlar's bill. and maybe we could do that tomorrow.
Thank you, Chair Newman. I would be open and amenable to that suggestion. I have another idea. Well, actually, this is Senator Dibble's suggestion. As we were talking about this, if you look at the top of, you know, page 5, we have R93 through 94, 95, R124. You have all sorts of this relates to automated vehicles. You have all sorts of Senate provisions and House provisions. I think this would be very time-consuming for the committee to plow through all of this. And, you know, if there are a couple of members that have particular interest in this, I know that outside of the committee we have folks in the House that are. I would recommend even having a working group of some kind or some smaller group of people come, you know, wrestle with this. And
killing election.
With
he just said that.
Yeah. Because I mean, this is a lot of stuff. So I don't know if we have folks that are interested in this particular topic. Representative Torkelson, you're reaching for your microphone. I will call on you. It sounds like you have some advice.
Well, I'm fine with the consideration to wait on these things. But that's not what I was going to comment on. Just wanted to note that I've already gotten two suggestions for a replacement for the Menlar's pivot language that doesn't seem to be very popular at all, and I'm happy to take other suggestions, and I will report to the committee if that's okay with the chairs.
Sure. I would delegate the naming contest to Representative Torkelson. So members, I think what I would like to do, I'm not asking for a motion, but I think what we'll do is set up a working group to work through this whole question of automated vehicles. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Conscripted, drafted, elected, I will serve.
Okay, thank you. I don't know if folks have thoughts about other members outside of this committee being a part of that, but I know we do have the author of the automated vehicles provisions in the House side, Representative Elkins, I'm sure would be interested in working this. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just before that, one recommendation for the new Menlar's 2.0.
No. Even worse.
No. We'll name it after Jasinski first.
I think it
I withdraw that recommendation.
It is late in the day. It is late in the week. So, members, I do agree with Senator Newman that we've done some good work today. We've gotten a lot of the same and similars accomplished. Since we have a few more minutes, and while we're together, I think it might be helpful to the committee, while we won't take action on these items, to have the staff go through some of the remaining similars, and so that when we do reconvene, we'll at least have a sense of what's still out there to do. So Mr. Burris, I think where I would suggest we start up again would be under vehicle platooning. And then, again, I think what we're just asking for here is just to summarize, explain kind of where the work we still have to do on these items. What are the areas we need to debate and discuss here?
Mr. Chair and members, so the vehicle platooning is spread across several sections that involve definitions and authorization to follow more closely than is typical. The main substantive language is on the very bottom of page R114, it's House Section 75, Senate Section 83, and this lays out the requirements for that have to be met in order for vehicle platooning to occur. There's some technical differences that staff has sort of a variety of merger suggestions when we get to that point. A couple of the policy questions are on differences between House and Senate. One is that the Senate language sets up the plan that's that's submitted as part of authorization of platoon to be valid for 1 year, and the House language is silent on that. And then there's a difference between House and Senate on the plan approval process. So the Senate language includes a requirement of the commissioner approving or denying the plan within 60 days, and the House language establishes that if the plan is not, if there's no action regarding approval of the plan within 60 days, that it's, that doesn't default to be an approval. So those are probably a couple of the key highlights on differences.
Okay. Definitely going to require more discussion. Questions? Any members have questions about this? Okay. I think we're now on page, let's see. The next one, Mr. Burris, would be, what do you have? Products?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, the next one on this list would be the one of the special overweight vehicle permits. This is for transporting agricultural products. Both the House and Senate language create a definition of what a qualifying product is, list out various types of commodities, crops, livestock, fluid milk, and so forth. The difference between the House and Senate, the key substantive difference is that the Senate identifies some additional commodities that are not included in the House list, fertilizers, potash, agricultural lime. There are also some technical differences between House and Senate on this, on the kind of structural codification of this language.
Thank you. Questions, members? Okay, State Academy signs, Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Chair and members, the House and Senate both have this provision directing MnDOT to erect signs as well as preventing removal of signs. There's a small technical difference. The key policy question for the committee is really around who pays for putting up the signs. Should it be MnDOT using existing resources or another source or entity?
Okay, and then now, yes,
Senator Newman. Mr. Chair, on that issue, I think Senator Jasinski was involved in especially the language regarding the agency has to adopt this out of their current funds. Do you want to address that, Senator Jasinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Newman. Yes, I believe it should be done by the agency, MnDOT. This is a unique situation. This is Minnesota Academies, which is actually funded completely by the state. And I was looking for the department to pick up the cost of that. Any cost you take away from Minnesota Academies is already under a very tight budget. So I believe there's already an existing post that are there that this could just be added to. There's also, in this location on I-35, there's also a sign for, I believe it's the Cicada Park exit, and they could be just added to this, and I don't think the cost is that much from the department. So I would ask that the committee ask that the department pay for the cost to erect the signs for the Minnesota State Academies.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Again, we're not going to take action now, but we'll definitely keep your recommendation in mind. Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just backtrack briefly to the ag products one that we just discussed before.
Sure.
This item, I'd volunteer to contact the interested parties and work out some language. I'd be happy if there's someone from the Senate side who'd be willing to also work on that particular issue.
Thank you. And you know, there are a variety of stakeholders in this issue, and I've certainly been contacted as well, and I don't know if there's anyone on the Senate that's interested in that. So I'm looking at Senator Dibble.
Where? I already got a pocket.
He's a workhorse. No. Okay, well, maybe me and you can work on this, Representative Portal.
Lovely.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If we could go back to the Faribault Academy issue, Senator Jasinski, you've got some language in there about commissioners prohibited from removing signs on Trunk Highway 60. I don't remember what that is all about. Could you explain that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Newman. There are existing signs on Highway 60 right now. They're in good condition, and the academies would like those to maintain where they're at. There's one on the highway. Interstate 35 comes in from the north and the south. Highway 60 is the main artery coming in from the east and the west. So basically, we cover all directions coming into town for the directional signage to the Minnesota academies.
And thank you, Senator Jasinski. And, you know, again, I'm not going to ask MnDOT to come up now, but I guess either via letter or testimony, I would like to get MnDOT's perspective on this issue. So, moving along, now we're really getting into some good stuff here. Electric vehicles. Plug it. We're getting into same and similars, but similars with policy differences. So we have electric vehicles and plug-in electric vehicle surcharges. This is, maybe Ms. Stengel can enlighten us. These are both Senate provisions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There are a few things dealing with electric vehicles. Both bodies amend the provision that has an electric vehicle surcharge. The Senate increases the current amount from $75 to $200. That's $200. And then the next section, Senate Section 35, establishes a $100 surcharge on plug-in electric vehicles. And the House takes a different approach with what to do with these surcharges, and I'll let Mr. Burris talk about that.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the House language changes the allocation of the current surcharge without modifying the amount, so that half would go into a new account that's also being established in the language elsewhere for electric vehicle charging stations.
So, yes, Senator, Chairman Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Burris, could you explain to us what the money that is going into this infrastructure account will be spent on?
Mr. Chair and members, I could refer you to the section that establishes the account. And this is a house-only provision that is found in Article 4 of the House language. The language is on page R49, and the funds would go into this new account and be available for public electric vehicle supply equipment throughout the state. And it would direct MnDOT to create a process in allocating the funds, allow for grants to political subdivisions. It also lays out some limitations on the expenditures, kind of the split between the Twin Cities metropolitan area and greater Minnesota, and sets a cap on expenditures for equipment based on charging capacity. Otherwise, it would be department's discretion to implement how the funds would be used in setting up the EV charging infrastructure.
And,
Chair
Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, whether Mr. Burris or others, in view of the fact this is a House-only version or language, you know, what are we talking about in terms of public electric vehicle supply equipment? Is it charging stations? Is it? I'm just looking for a little bit more detail as to what would be proposed to spend this money on, because I think the funds currently go into HUTDF.
Correct.
So I'm interested in knowing specifically what that money would be spent on rather than on highways.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, first to the allocation, indeed, the dollars do currently go into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. There is not a definition in the language as to what would constitute public electric vehicle supply equipment kind of initially I would expect that the department in developing this program or implementing this activity would lay that out as to what would count and what wouldn't, and I would kind of at a high level anticipate that it would include charging stations and energy, you know, the lines needed to create, you know, provide electricity to those stations. But beyond that, it would kind of be left to the department to identify and lay things out as the current language stands.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
One more question. During the discussion in the House on this provision, was there any discussion regarding the Volkswagen settlement money, some of which is to be used for electric vehicle charging stations, you know, in various places in the state?
I'll answer that.
Okay.
We didn't talk. We've talked about the Volkswagen settlement, but not specifically in this context. I can tell you, Chair Newman, that some of the thinking that went into this, maybe borrowed from the governor's idea. The governor's rec on this was to increase the fee from 75 to 100, but use the $25 out of that fee for this type of infrastructure development. And I'm not sure, Mr. Burris, if in the governor's bill, I'm not remembering specifically now, if there were definitions of the kind of definitions that Chair Newman is trying to get at. But I think the idea was that the governor had made a distinction between the fee used for HUTDF and then using some of that money for electric vehicle infrastructure. But that's kind of where we got the idea. But maybe there is some language that would be helpful to you in the governor's bill. And we'll either get that to you. I see Mr. Lee is looking through it, but hopefully that answers some of your questions. Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Chair Hornstein. I just wanted to comment a little bit about electric vehicles in the context of what we discussed in the House and how we had an entire day where we discussed the importance of electric vehicles in the context of climate change and where everything is going in our country and in the state right now. And so it's very clear as we discuss things in our committee that electric vehicles are positive direction to be going with it regard to our fleet of vehicles in the state of Minnesota for roadways, for climate, for a lot of different reasons, for health issues, and for many, many different things, especially as you go into greater Minnesota and throughout the state. And so it's really, we feel and have put a lot of effort in on the electric vehicle side of things that we need to continue to promote and to make available electric vehicles and not put hurdles and prohibitions that are not necessarily necessary in order to promote having more electric vehicles within the state of Minnesota. And with that, that's why we left what we did. We lovingly call it the Garofalo language that moves those fees over, because it was his idea, moves those fees over to really help to create more infrastructure for electric vehicles across the state. And so that's kind of a little context as to why we did that. And at this point, and Chair Hornstein, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that what the figure was is less than one half of 1% of vehicles on the road today are electric vehicles. And as we and this pool of money at this point won't account to a significant amount of money. And for, like I mentioned, health, climate, many other reasons, we would like to have Minnesotans switching over to as many electric vehicles as possible, and putting artificial hurdles up for that without a significant amount of gain on the other side is kind of the context and where we went with the language in our bills.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. So, members, I think, you know, in our last 10 minutes here, I think we have just several more of these areas of where there's some policy differences, but both the House and Senate did address these topics. So if Mr. Burris and Ms. Stengel can continue, we had a couple of different provisions related to metro mobility, and we could talk about those, then disability parking and bikeways, and then paper products, and I think we're close to done. So, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, so the next provision is similar between House and Senate. This would allow for data sharing between the Metropolitan Council and Department of Human Services and around users of Metro Mobility. House and Senate have some differences on kind of the basic codification technical approach. The House language also includes some requirements around notice being provided to the individuals whose data is being shared.
And we'll get back to that. There's another provision related to that, too. We also have bikeways and disability parking.
And that, Mr. Chair and members, is the limitation on when a bikeway can be established that would have the effect of eliminating disability parking. Both the House and Senate have this as a topic. So the policy difference is on whether the local units of government are directed to prioritize retention of disability parking or are prohibited from removing disability parking. So the prioritization approach is the House language, and the Senate language has a harder prohibition.
And thank you for that. And then we have Representative Eklund on the House side. I don't remember who the Senate author is, but Representative Eklund has a paper product special permit.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, this paper product special permit is, again, it's House, both House and Senate make a modification that is one piece of the change is the same between House and Senate to broaden the roads that the permit can be operated on. This is somewhat different from a lot of special permits in current law in that there's a specific set of routes that are identified for use of the permit. So that language is the same between House and Senate, and then the House has a couple of additional provisions. One is to specify the types of products that can be transported under the 2- and 3-unit vehicle permits to specify paper products and iron ore tailings. My understanding from a brief conferring with the Department of Transportation is that those are the products that have currently been authorized to be transported under this special permit. But in current law, there's no specification other than a kind of implication in the headnote, which doesn't carry legal effect. There's no further identification of the types of commodities that can be transported under the special permit. And then the second difference between House and Senate is another permit provision that's in the same section of law that allows for hauling oversized tires. And the House language would prevent the change on routes to go into effect for the tire hauling so that the same routes would, the routing that's permissible under that permit would be unchanged in the House language. In the Senate language, that change would on routing would also extend to the tire hauling permit.
Remain, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Burris, as I recall, last year or the year before, there was some language in a bill regarding hauling oversized tires on an articulated trailer that was really applicable only to the Virginia-Minnesota area. Is that what you're talking about with respect to oversized tires, or is it a different issue?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, yes, I believe you're thinking of that. I think we're talking about the same provision. If I recall, that came up in conference committee on perhaps the last budget bill. Or maybe in 17, and the way that was structured was to codify in the same section, same statute where the paper products permit is located, yep, and create a cross reference, yep, for routes rather than list out that specific route where the tire manufacturer that was in mind is located. It just sort of piggybacked the same route limitations for the paper products permit. And so the change of routing under the paper products permit also impacts that tire permit.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
The House version, Mr. Burris, is not restricting the ability to move these oversized tires. Am I correct on that from your explanation?
We need it.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, that's correct. It's okay. It's not changing the route. It has the effect of not changing any routing allowed.
Okay, Mr. Burris, just a couple more things. The air transportation service charge.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, this regards MnDOT's charging for use of state aircraft. Both House and Senate make some modifications on charges to in a couple of ways. One is that both the House and Senate language provide for charging for capital costs. The House makes that charge permissive, whereas the Senate makes that required. So that's one difference between House and Senate. Second is restrictions on use of those funds that are collected on the capital side. The House language creates an annual appropriation of those dollars. The Senate does not have an annual, doesn't appropriate the funds. They would build up in the account. And the Senate language also prevents transfers out of that account. And then also there's a difference between House and Senate on the current service charge. The House language broadens what the charge could be imposed for to include indirect operating costs, pilot salaries. And the Senate does not make those modifications on the current charge.
Okay. Then the last two before we adjourn, members, campus light rail related issue, and then Calhoun Isle.
Mr. Chair,
Metmo expansion.
Oh, Metmo. Sorry. We also have we have Lakeville and then other locales. So we'll do Lakeville and then the last two. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair and members on the Metropolitan Council's Metro Mobility Program, both House and Senate expand to Lakeville, and the Senate language expands to some additional communities.
Okay. Then our last two.
The next one, both House and Senate address light rail stops in the U of M and adjacent stops. And what both the House and Senate languages have the effect of adding in a fourth stop. The House language codifies the program and provides for funding, which would come from the proposed House-only transportation sales tax. And the Senate language would direct the Metropolitan Council to absorb the costs of adding the additional stop.
And Mr. Burris, Chair Newman pointed out, and we should probably get a sense of where this is going if we can. It's also in the higher ed bill, and hopefully one or the other bodies will be able to figure it out. But I do feel it's a transportation issue as well as higher ed. So,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can we have time quickly to have Mr. Judge Shetland talk briefly about that, if possible?
Sure. I know you guys have a caucus coming up.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay. Senator Jasinski, we're going to all of these issues that Mr. Burris is laying out, we're going to have some pretty thorough discussion.
Okay, thank you.
Or probably early next week. Mr. Burris, one last one that's pretty important.
Mr. Chair, members, this is there are two sections. One is Senate only, and the other is substantively the same between House and Senate, and that is on requiring facilitated meetings between the Metropolitan Council and the Calhoun Isles Condominium Association. So this relates to the Southwest LRT project. The House language has a effective date of the day following final enactment. Senate effective date would be July 1. And then there's also sort of going along with that, a Senate-only provision on requiring the council to contract with an engineering group for a vibration susceptibility study.
Great. So thank you, members. Senator Newman and I have had a chance to talk a little about the plan for the coming days. And I do appreciate the committee's work today. We got a lot done. But as you can see, even in our similar language, it's similar, but some are very similar and some are not. And so we, Senator Newman and I, are going to be meeting tomorrow to kind of map out the process for how we want to resolve these questions in the committee. We'll be not meeting apparently tomorrow or over the weekend, but we'll be taking a very deep dive into the issues that Mr. Burris has outlined on Monday. And then, of course, next week we will do our very best to exchange offers between the House and the Senate and try to do our best to resolve our remaining differences on both the policy and finance questions in this bill. So, so again, no meeting tomorrow. Chair Newman, did you have any final comments?
Not at this time, no, I do not. Thank you.
Okay. So we are adjourned. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend, everyone.